4 years after the brutal murder of whistleblower Babita Deokaran, the conversation about protections and support for whistleblowers rages on. In today's show, I'm joined by social justice activist Deboho Kass and whistleblower Martha Ngoye. And we're talking about how their work as whistleblowers has changed the negative term Impimbi to a valued god of our social fabric. Thank you, Martha, for agreeing to come and be on with us. And thank you very much, because I think this conversation remains a constant conversation in the South African mindset. We hear so many things almost daily about corruption, about people being held accountable. And just a week and a half ago, one of the most shocking instances of a blowback on somebody who had decided to stand up for the public and the public purse as a whistleblower 4 years ago. We were all horrified at what happened to Babita Deokaran. And that brought to the fore the work of whistleblowers and the constant fear that they actually do live under and what happens when people stand up. And I'm wondering today, 4 years later, has anything changed? There was lots of talk after she was killed. There were many forums and many promises. And the two of you work in the environment. Has anything changed?
You go first.
A
simple answer.
There's never a simple answer.
Nothing has changed. Well, in my personal opinion, nothing has changed. Well, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, and I think this is something that Babita had spoken about also when she reported to her boss that, look, there's this problem. I'm worried. And if we don't do something about it, our lives are at risk. And nothing was done. And this is what invariably happens, you know, against anybody that speaks out. The bosses are never, you know, in most cases, are interested in taking up the issues pertaining to corruption. It's the same everywhere, or else. I mean, the story is everywhere. I was just saying to Deboho now that the GPAA issue is such a nightmare for me personally, because I'm sitting here and I'm saying, why? Why does the company even go out and spend so much money, right, to do a forensic investigation to find the whistleblower? So what has changed?
And what's in the interest? What's in the interest of the public? Because I think people then go, why must I talk? Why must I talk out? But in the public interest, what should we be doing more of? Deboho, you were just talking about the fact that we can't be silent and be quiet. And have to continue, but at what cost?
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, listening to Martha, you know, it makes me realize just how much still needs to be done. But I look at it differently. Maybe the eternal optimist in me almost always gets the better of me. If it wasn't optimism, probably I would have given up some of the things that we do, because some of us are just thrust in things that many people say, but only can I, why? You know,
that's what happens.
You know, you should be sitting home doing other things that are income generating, or sitting with your grandchild or grandchildren and doing this and the other. But why are you still doing this when you see that this thing you cannot change, this beast cannot be changed? But you often say to yourself, what other people have gone through, you know, makes what I think is an issue into nothingness, if I may put it that way, into insignificance. Because whistleblowers themselves, they pay a huge amount of price. And all we do is that we sit, we pontificate, we talk on forums, we go on interviews and say this and the other. But where it matters most is what those entrusted with the authority to pass laws, to act, to make things happen, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. Nothing has happened. And it's matter done. But I look at it also differently. The optimist in me also comes and says, 4 years ago, talk about whistleblower was like, don't even mention it. You know, it reminds me when we had the inaugural event, the whistleblower awards. Justice Museneke took a while to confirm because he grappled, and I think he did also share that in his speech. He grappled with the idea of whistleblowers and why do you want to recognize them?
Awards.
And the awards, you know. And once he got around that, you could see how, I would call it a sermon, what he delivered, you know. It was so powerful because until then, very little was ever said publicly so much about whistleblowers. In fact, the overriding narrative was Mpimpi or why are you telling on us, comrade doesn't tell on comrade, Gune protocol, you know, all those little things. And yet don't understand that people have got agency, that they have to take decisions or make decisions that they believe are not only right for them, but in the public interest. That is where the sacrifice comes. Mm. And more often than not, people don't wake up one morning and say, I want to be a whistleblower. You see wrongdoing, you see something happening, and you decide, no, I cannot just...
Well, you know, you say people don't wake up in the morning and want to be whistleblowers. And I wonder, when I remember when the awards were happening, isn't that actually what we want? Shouldn't we be ingraining it into everybody that when you see something wrong, you must say something? Because then there's a wave of whistleblowers when things are wrong or not.
Yeah, you see the crop of Martha, what we normally call state capture whistleblowers. They are the ones who actually came out and said, look, this much and nothing further. You know, it was before Babita's you know, assassination, long before that. And they are the people who said, we'll endure. And they're still going through the weight of the resources of the state machinery being used against them. And maybe let me finish off that point when I talk about changes. On the one hand, government is not there's not movement on the legislative side and government, but society's perception about whistleblowers happened. You see a young lady in working as a waiter or a waitress at some restaurant where she exposes what they're subjected to, and boldly so, and in the process helping save others who are exposed to this type of employment arrangements. That, for me, I can only think they are emboldened because now they know that others are walking, that have walked that road before, and it's okay to speak. Your friends can say you're rating on somebody. And even now, I want to weave it in. Some of it is accidental, where you find that people, you get to know about somebody who's a thug or tenderpreneur or whatever, and suddenly things happen, you end up speaking out. And it's not something that happened recently. I can go back to a matter involving SARS, the 200 million VAT issue. I can't remember, but it was only concluded last year, where somebody told on their husband. And that's how SARS got to know. But I'm saying all this because it doesn't matter what the causative factor is. The factor is somebody else. This enough is enough, and I'm going to talk. So I just wanted to close that loop, but to say, yet there's a lot that we still need to be done, and government is not doing enough. And it is very hurtful when you see ministers, even the president, on podiums talking about how they love to do something for whistleblowers. And yet we're sitting here 2 years after the discussion document on overhauling.
I was going to ask about the discussion document. So Jonah, just tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, we've done a lot of work. I mean, we've sat in workshops where, you know, NACAC, those that have been appointed in NACAC said, look, let's come together. And also, you can't talk about whistleblowers without whistleblowers, right? So we were part of that. We discussed, we spent like, I think, 2 days or so, even more, you know, talking about the reforms that need to be there, talking about the changes that we think need to be there, talking about amending the Protected Disclosure Act, you know, making suggestions to that, and even giving the time frame as to when should the president actually implement some of these issues that we're raising. But really, the NACEC report, closeout report, has just been received now the other day. You know, I belong to a whole lot of groups of whistleblowers, you know, and the discussions that we've had or that are carrying on there is it worth even reading that report? Do you understand? I mean,
and what's your answer to that question? Is it worth reading the report?
I actually asked that question also to say, must I trot through this 800-page report to say what? To understand, because certain things were you had hanging fruit that you could work on, but is there a political will? There isn't any, and I'm going to say this: why I believe there is no political will. Just today, right? Jeff Wicks is talking about how in the Tembisa scandal issue, you've got a nephew of the president who benefited over 400 million rands. Now, do you think anything is going to be done about this thing? When there is so much gumph that is happening and the people that are supposed to be doing certain things are not doing them because there's connections right through. I mean, Kwanazi has raised it, you know, to say, look out. There's all these issues that are happening. So for me, NACEC has happened. I mean, the active citizens movement, right, has been at pains to say, please, can you tell us what has happened with the deliberations that we have done? There has been absolutely no response. It's like everything was so confidential. Do you understand? So, I mean, what are we talking about? You know, at the end of the day, are we doing this to really look at anti-corruption in its broadest sense? Or, you know, the issues of the whistleblowers were key at the time to say we want legislation, we want to amend this act, we want to make sure that whistleblowers are protected. Where are we?
And speaking of the protections for whistleblowers, I think another part that we don't talk enough about is the aftermath, right? So in the interest of the public, people stand up and they say, this is what's wrong, this is what's going on. They tell us, they open the windows and shine the light in. And then I can understand people who are within the government sector who are benefiting, wanting, as you were saying with Martha and watching what's happening with you, with the state machinery being used against a person. But what of the private sector? What of the private sector? What life exists for people outside of government when you have been a whistleblower, when you are being targeted by bad faith actors?
The private sector is just as complicit as government. In fact, sometimes even more, even worse, because I was saying this because the private sector partake in the procurement system, and that is where most of the resources are diverted. I mean, I'm talking about companies like Bain, KPMG, ABB, you name them. We're talking billions, not a few millions, billions, you know, where one decision can actually, cause the state or the fiscus to part with serious amount of money. And when that money, when that those things have been, people have been found and they agree that we will pay back, oftentimes that money doesn't even filter through to our fiscus because the US DOJ or the SEC will take some of it. And, you know, so, and now you're left with individuals who've exposed this corruption. Government and US citizens benefit from the recoveries and they're left destitute. So you're talking about Protected Disclosure Act. It's a misnomer, actually. There's no protection. You must just call it NPA, no Protection Act. you know, and that should be it. And here, coming from a government that is part of the G20, that always say, well, we are aligned with international best practice and all that. And yet the G20 in 2012 in Japan, they adopted, they signed to the high level initiative, what is it called? High level initiative on the protection of whistleblowers. And you're still saying, what is being done for protecting whistleblowers? One whistleblower in exile is one whistleblower too much. Mm. One whistleblower losing their life is one whistleblower too. I haven't met Babita's, I've met Babita's daughter at home, at their home once. But then you ask yourself, how do you feel as a child knowing that your mom, your dad, you know, gave so much and yet nothing has been done to help those who come up with it. And what is also more interesting is that even Babita herself, initially they were denied the Gauteng Premier
pension.
So she's not a whistleblower.
Wow. Yeah, they were, yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think this is the issue. The identity whistleblower was given, but as we all say, you know, we are professionals doing our jobs. As and when things happen. You don't go out there and say, look at Martha Ngoye, she's a whistleblower, she's going to blow the whistle, da, da, da. You don't do that. You go out as a professional and say, the ethics require me to do things like, these are my values. This is what I believe in and this is what I'm going to do. And John Clark, he's a social psychologist who has really assisted also the whistleblowers in terms of speaking about certain things and getting assistance. Meeting the likes of Teboho, you know, to say, look, we are going to not leave you guys out there, has said perhaps we call ourselves witness bearers. You know, we bear witness to all this corruption that is happening and we speak to it. You know, because the notion of being called whistleblowers, it's like this whole issue. People still consider whistleblowers as impimpis. You know, you got people who say, yeah, wapapa, why did they do that? Why did they put themselves in that position? You understand? So I mean, it's just so sad to see that it continues to happen. And that's why I'm saying it continues to happen to date. You know, and as Teboho says, you know, with the State Capture Commission, we were the first lot, so to speak, to be out there and called whistleblowers and stuff like that. At least that came out in numbers. And now there's a lot more that are coming out. But, you know, we sit back and say, I mean, how many years ago has it been? You know, when undertakings had been made, you know, to say, yes, we're going to do this. There's going to be work that is done. Da, da, da. You speak about Babita's daughter. I mean, really, my child just yesterday, she says to me, you know what, mommy, now I have an appreciation. And now she says, she talks to this about black people. She says, you were actually put through this, my mother, by our black government. Is that for real? Now I understand when you talk about certain things, what you mean. Do you understand? Because I think we bought into a dad. Yeah, we bought into a dad when the president, when he was appointed, speaking about Tumamina and, you know, that whole hoo-ha. Really, we believed as professionals to say, here it is. We are coming from the Zuma era, right? And we are going into an era where we believe in this man.
The new dawn.
The new dawn. He spoke to the new dawn. What happened to us? I mean, if I say to you, under President Zuma, even though we knew there was so much corruption, right, that was happening there, professionals were never targeted like we are right now under the Cyril Ramaphosa's regime. Never. Do you understand? People were not killed like we are now, right? And the reality is, and one is not necessarily condoning the things that happened during the Zuma era. But what I'm saying, and what is important, is that we believed in this new dawn. I'm one of those people that believed in the new dawn. But where am I today? You know?
Sunset at dawn. You know, you mentioned, and I remember when I first ever heard the term whistleblowers, it was actually a Time headline many years ago in Washington, and you talk about in Japan, whistleblowing and the need to bear witness to bad faith actors within the state and within companies is not a thing that is unique to South Africa.
It's not.
What does the international world look at? How do they deal with it, and why is it so difficult for us to emulate? However it works, it must work in other countries, or does it not? Do they
Hey, you know, I probably would have to confine myself to South Africa and maybe Africa if I were to extend myself, because if I'm going to even try to talk about what's happening in the US, I'll be at sea. Yes, we hear about whistleblowers also being taken care of through the SEC programs for the Department of Justice and others. But there's a lot that is also not happening there, where people live in fear. Probably, I cannot tell whether they live in more fear than us. But speaking to us locally here, this has always been a huge disappointment and a letdown by our president. And he is enabled, but I think... Also, we must also look back and take stock of ourselves as civil society, as professionals and all that, and say, what is it that we are doing to embolden the presidency or the president to take the kind of, you know, lackadaisical attitude towards action? Is it because he's surrounding himself with people who tell them what they do, who can be used as a buffer? I'm one to reference back the matter of NACAC that you mentioned. I don't want to use this platform to speak ill of individuals, but I'm just saying as a process itself, if you've got...
Oh, you're among friends, you absolutely...
Yeah, no, the internet is not a friend. Yeah. Once this thing starts hitting them. But the point I want to make is that when you've got people there whose integrity can still be impeached, people who are able to connive and say, don't support this initiative or that initiative because I don't like this person.
Wow.
And want to scupper initiatives, even at the 11th hour, speaking with their friends with money from outside the shores and said, redirect your funds, don't go there, don't do this. And because they've got the ear of the president, they've got the ear of them. And you ask yourself, how many of them have really read that 800-odd NACAC final report? How much input did they make? Or was that conjured up somewhere? Because harabali, most of us harabali, you know, bury something in a book and say...
800-page report.
We don't... Then you ask yourself, what input have you made? As Martha is feeling so let down about the fact that whistleblowers doesn't seem to actually be reflecting or in a manner doesn't get treated in a manner that it ought to be in this report. You ask yourself, why was their voices? Why is their voices not resonant? Why is their voices not, you know... heard? What is their voice not being so forceful amongst it? I don't want to sit here and be judgmental, but the fact of the matter, we need a lot of introspection, even us, as we do point a finger at government.
Well, if we take it away from government, in your view, you run an organization that really is a public interest, civil society-based organization. If we take it away from government, what is it that everyday citizens, like me and the listeners, what is it that we could do more of to change some of these perspectives, to change the way that it is?
Yeah, I don't want to sound defeated because I'm not, at least not yet. But it pains me that whereas the ANC would say the branch is the MSMA, you know, the basic unit of the organization, society's basic unit is the home. What are we doing in our own spaces, in our own homes? What kind of children are we raising when they go out there at school and they see another child having left their jersey or their bag or their phone and they feel the temptation to take it and bring it home? And I, as a parent, take a blind eye. We're cultivating character traits that will later on erode the fabric of society. And we are complicit with that. If we allow it to happen, we've got our own teachers, our own peers who have relationships that are improper with children. And you ask, what are you instilling in society? So if we have to even begin to look to government, we must, what type of society do we want? You know, what type of home do I want?
Yeah.
You know?
I think for me, Wenapumi, you know, institutions like Tsabotebogo and, you know, civil society, I think we mustn't take their role lightly as well as whistleblowers. Because I can tell you now, without the assistance of civil society in this fight against corruption, I'm sure, I mean, a lot of us would have perished. It is very clear. And I think for me, and speaking for myself, I can say one has survived because also of the support one received from civil society. You know, they pick you up and they say you're not alone because you do feel alone. Mm-hmm. you know, very alone in this thing. And you actually don't know where to turn. Because I was in this battle on my own. And when I was, you know, approached to say, come be part of us, I felt that there is a home. And that was civil society that had approached me. So there's a lot of work that civil society has also done that has also benefited, you know, whistleblowers. And we mustn't take light of that. And I think for me, it is also important for all of us to learn from each other's experience. I mean, I always say the reason why I'm so passionate about this thing is also maybe because of my legal background. You know, I understand even in terms of how a lot of things work, you understand, that it makes it not so daunting for me because I have that appreciation. So you can imagine somebody who doesn't have that legal background, who is settled with this thing, going to here, going to there, being trumped up charges, you just don't know what you're dealing with, having to deal with this thing on your own. So the home that has been created by civil society is very key to whistleblowers, you know. But I also say that, and I know I've had this discussion with Teboho, to say, Teboho, nobody owns us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Nobody owns us as whistleblowers. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? Because it cannot be that, you know, you have instances where, you know, this one is more focused on this, and then there's issues amongst various civil society groupings to say, no, this is what we want to do. We want to support this. We want to support that. We don't want to support, you know. It doesn't sit well with where we are as whistleblowers. You understand? And that, for me, becomes important. Yes, help us out. But in so doing, it does not mean you then own us. That's not how it is.
We're not your tools.
Understand? And it's very emotive. I mean, I'm sitting here and I can already,
are you feeling the hair at the back?
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, this is real for me. And that's why I guess I've stayed away also from speaking a lot about, you know, whistleblowers and the changes and so on. I've decided to take a back seat. But it does not mean there's no work that I've been doing in the background, you know, to try and assist other whistleblowers, because it does become daunting. You know, I've been asked for interviews quite a lot, and I've, like, I've done my bit. You know, talk to the guys that are now experiencing it now, because my story has been out there. It has been told. And I'm still living it, you know. And the reality is, it is my journey, you know, with the support that I've received. All I can say is that I'm very grateful that my child has also come out, you know, not having been destroyed by how they used to see their mother come in. Because she's, at one point she says to, you know, Mom, the minute the car parked in the garage and you stormed into the house, you brought in this whole, you know, feeling, this whole atmosphere, which is so negative in the house, you know. I didn't realize that. This was a child that was doing homework, and then she must clench up, and just because I'm walking in, because of the energy that I'm bringing in into the environment. So this thing has really caused problems. You know, speaking out has caused problems, and it's the same story for all of us. You read about it, it's the same story for all of us. You know, and that's why when you see certain people out there say, yeah, I'm being targeted because I'm a CEO, because I'm a woman, and you think, please, can you help us?
I think the multifaceted impact that all of this has is quite evident in having this conversation. And I'm also just thinking about what it means for the kids. What it means for the kids to see, and the idea of a term like whistleblower or imbimbi, you know, and what it means for the next generation of South Africans growing up and what we are teaching or not teaching them is also fascinating.
We want to turn this around and say, let's own the narrative. Let's own this, what is supposed to be a bad word, whistleblower, boo, bolela, speak out, or whatever you might call it, you know. We say, we must own the agency and say we've got agency to make sure that whatever's behind that term, you know, is meant to do good, not only for the entity that this person is, but for the better good of society. Yeah. And that is what we are, you know, and maybe to link it back to what we talk about the changes. If you go back to 2009 or 2000, when you had Jimmy Mukhala assassinated ahead of the, you know, many people don't know that when we're merrymaking and dancing when Sipiwe Tshabalala was scoring and saying, you know, Halakasha or whatever it is that we're doing, when we're saying, feel it.
It is here.
It is here. What we forgot to also add in terms of our minds, feel it. The corruption is also here.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody just got killed for the stadium that we are busy celebrating in. Mm-hmm. And government is doing nothing. We've got a case here, Jimmy Mukhala, sitting between Nelspruit and Pretoria since 2018. 7 years late. Preliminary, and I'm not talking about the matter part, I'm talking about the civil part. A decision being taken on, this doesn't belong here, it belongs to High Court. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been enrolled. Now, when you approach those who are supposed to be enrolling the matters and you say, NPA, what's going on? They basically tell you, you've got no reason. I almost used a French word. You've got no business getting involved in this. Mm. On a need-to-know basis, we'll make an announcement that's appropriate. Mm. And you say, how uncaring, how cunning of people to actually be not care about the family at Jimmy Mukhala. They don't know what became of the children who had to be pulled back from this type of schools that were going to. What became of them? How are they as adults? What is the attitude towards society? What is the harm? What is it that can still be done to assist? The list goes on. You can talk about Moss Parkway. You can talk about, you know, so many other instances. And you ask yourself, what has changed? Nothing, Mother.
And I think for me, the sad part also is that, I mean, as an admitted attorney, you know, I find it extremely difficult that you find some of us in this profession. I mean, if you look at what has happened within the legal fraternity, I mean, every other day you read about a lawyer that has been removed from the role because of corruption. And when you think about it, you've got to fit and proper, you've got to pass the bar exam, you've got to pass the, you know, you've got to know how to deal with your clients' monies, the trust issues. Those are not new things. Those things have been there. But when you look at it and you see the rot that actually exists even amongst our own, you wonder. I mean, here we had, is it Sarah Berger, that university, what is it, the university there in the Eastern Cape, man?
Forte.
Mm. I mean, whole professionals being arrested and interrogated by their own. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. These are legal people, you know, trying to do only what is, but what were they put through? Only for her to come out and for things to be crushed. What did she go through?
Yes, I remember that.
For that period of time? Yeah. What has it done to her integrity, her profession, her everything that she has worked very hard for? You know? And people just don't care. Yeah. People don't care. They destroy it because it doesn't mean that just because now she's cleared, she can go back and practice, you know? Because as one has seen, you apply for jobs, but they don't want to touch you.
The very corporates that say we are pro whistleblowers, you sell them, this person used to work for government entity X, and as far as they're concerned, they're being victimized or retaliated against. Can you find space? Then they look and say, hey, but if we have this person in our environment, it means it might also close our taps or, you know, our opportunities, you know, because they're driven by profit motive. So that is the problem that we also encounter. And once you're tainted, even if you're cleared, as you rightly put it.
Because all the stories, right? So all the stories and all the papers and you never know what's right and wrong. And
I mean, I don't want to personalize this, but I was saying to Martha, I was like, Martha, no, this matter, I must come to a close. At some point, something must give. But we've got people here who told us they were ready to govern from the get-go. But we know that they were not. No one near ready. No way. Because they couldn't cleanse themselves of the kind of atrocities that they subjected themselves in exile. What they did to Chris Hani, what they've did to other, what they've done to women in exile, and when the Motsoenyane Commission came and said, this is the things that you need to reckon with and atone for. And they're still talking about renewal today. They couldn't do the renewal and make sure that they cleanse themselves on key critical issues. The gender-based violence and the kind of things that we see happening in society is not something that just happens now. It has always been there, and people say, we are ready to govern. To govern how? To continue the perpetuation and subjugation of one sex over the other? You know, continue to cover up for, you know, our comrade, you know, he was doing this to raise funds for us. Mm-hmm. We have got instances where you find the companies like EOH being used to fundraise for a particular political party, and even their leaders own personal lifestyles and excesses to be funded by that. When you say you are ready to govern, the chickens will come home to roost. And when we look back, we say we had an opportunity, or, well, those who are in power say we had an opportunity to reckon with ourselves and tell society that we have wronged you. And we truly, either we step back and reflect, or we, from henceforth we are going to atone. But when you atone, show it in your action. You cannot on the one hand and say we want to investigate the corruption that Mkhwanazi is talking about. But on the other hand, you say stop the prosecution because Matanga hasn't even asked for the files. We don't even know he's going to ask for the files. Yeah. Because he probably doesn't care about the contents of those files, the dockets. Yeah. He just wants to know what was the process, what was the whole thing. Yeah. If you are worried about the contamination, make sure that you keep records, copies, and
got the files.
But support the police officer, the you know, who go and do the investigation, prosecute. We want to see those people in orange overalls. Mm. And yet we want us to believe you that you want to do good by us?
Yes.
Come on.
But I think for me, the also troubling thing is some of us professionals who are pliable. Right? I want to be liked. Right? And then you go and you damage Pumi's name because you want to go up the ladder. I know of people that have really suffered. And do I feel sorry for them? I don't. Because they thought that they could climb the ladder at my expense.
Yeah.
In fact, some of them perished. Do I feel sorry for them? I don't. I pray to my God and say, forgive me. But I have got no feelings.
But that comes back to what you were saying about the home.
Yeah.
And the people we are raising and the things that even we as parents accept. Because it's also it's your behavior as a parent as well.
It
you
is.
Know, that you put out there, the basic unit.
Mm. Pumi Mathe, you'd know growing up, if you had to do something wrong down the street, where we're 3 streets away from home, they'll give you a smack and find out where you stay and take you home and tell your mom or your dad, and they'll give you even more. forget about the violent part or the using of coercion as a means, but you also had basic things, respect. You don't get that respect anymore. You walk a mall, a kid will bump into you and
walk away.
You know, and then you say, "But you're in a school uniform. Why are you kissing each other on the just?" Say, "What do
I have?" I know. I mean, it's so bad. I mean, I think for me, the values that we instill in our children. We must look at ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, because when I think about how I was raised, good Lord, if I think of doing certain things, I think, good Lord, what is that man and woman going to do in their graves?
Yeah.
So the reality is what are we teaching our children? You know, if I'm going to climb the corporate ladder at somebody else's expense at work, what am I saying to my child? Because one way or another is going to come out, and what you think you're going to achieve does not necessarily also pan out that way.
Yeah.
Then you become frustrated.
Yeah.
Understand? So it's very unfortunate, but this is the country that we live in. My daughter always says, when I leave this country, you are coming with me.
Oh, at least you like him. You've got those offers.
So then, I ask myself, you know, there's lots of talk about a national identity, national dialogue, shared value systems. Can we do it?
Come on.
Do you
remember this three-letter word called MRM?
Yeah.
Moral Regeneration Movement.
which was run by a certain deputy president.
Yeah, who used a shower to cleanse himself of potential, you know, infection.
Yeah.
And he had displayed the kind of moral depravity that made him fit for presidency in the eyes of his comrades and society that voted that party in. And you still say we can win this war if we don't question those things, we don't deal with those demons and say, where have we gone wrong? What have we done wrong? Why have we perpetuated this? Because these things just don't happen like a tap. You open and then the water comes up, it closes. It happens gradually until it happens suddenly, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
Because we keep a blind eye on the smaller things, and then by the time it turns into something big. You know, I've got a child, they come back with the latest iPhone or whatever phones are out there, and I don't question why you're getting your phone. I've got a friend who I know that they are dating with kids young enough to be their grandchildren.
That's okay. I mean, you just let it be. It's crazy.
What are you trying to cultivate in our society, that this kind of conduct is good? No, you know that it's not right. You know, and it starts with us. So the fabric of society is so torn. If we still have that fabric, by the way, it's so shredded that you begin to ask, where do we start? Where do we start with civic duty? But also parents, we are aloof. And not all of us as parents come from parents with an educational background. But they would care about getting an education, about you being supported, about you. And they will heap praise. Oh, you've done well, Lord. You know, they'll be talking about you in the church. Hey, when I got this and this, and you know, and it gives you pride. But today, we parent through remote controls. We parent through, home delivery. We parent through... We don't engage. We don't sit around and share a meal. We don't sit around. And it didn't really matter what meal it was, whether it was papa kalibisi or, papa ka tuna fish. I know my kids hate tuna fish. but you don't have where you huddle, where you are able to check with each other and say, are you okay? Are you okay? Is anything going well in your life? We don't. We are huddled. But we are too busy to entertain ourselves elsewhere and leave what we should be building, what we should be bequeathing our children, our society. Because I want to also be seen, in those places with driving them. So there's a lot. In fact, even our generation, because we are lucky because we come from generational stock, if I may call them, that we had a lot of
role models.
Role models. You know, we grew up shibilun tate mapo, staff nurse, mama ki teacher. We would respect and say, wow, one day lina kwa tlawa teacher. In fact, I remember a friend of mine, young as we were, remusor, why wa tlawa teacher? I don't know, because my teacher has a maga, analyst kaftin, and why see, but for us kaftin, it's a flask. And Mara, I see, like, they are bigger than life. We don't treat people who are professionals like that. We don't treat people who are doing right by us and accord them the respect that they do in their profession, whatever the profession is, whether you're a nurse or a driver or a cleaner and all that. We are at the society at a stage where to judge you as when we meet for the first time, I say, what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
You know, if you say, I'm a businessman. Oh, should I now? They're pumping. We'll have the tenders again. I'm on. Or if I ask you where do your kids or where do you stay or where do your kids go to school, already we judge it. And all of us now want to aspire so that when we get to introduce ourselves, we show that sis figile nati, sis lapo, or we aspire. And we'll do anything and everything to attain that, including the wrong things that we do through the procurement system, including putting down people for selfish and personal reasons, just so that we can think we'll elevate ourselves.
But you see, the irony of this whole thing is that the people that do that are the people that get recognized, ne? And then if they move you, they move you from here. So if you've done something here, you've bad-mouthed Pumi, you then get rewarded elsewhere, And this is the type of environment that has been created out there. To say, if you don't toe the line, I mean, we used to be told, if you don't toe the line, if you're working against me, Do you understand?
You walk besides your shoes.
This is it. So those things exist. You know, I mean, if you really look at also the brutal killing of Babita, a woman just doing her job. I mean, 12 bullets riddled. I mean, this woman, they knew she was not going to be armed. They knew everything about her. You know, the brutality was just something else, over and above the fact that you have also some of the people that were arrested now the other day already eligible for parole next year. Mm. Babita's daughter and Babita's family are still, you know, without their child, their sister, their mother. And you're going to get this thing. And the kingpin is still out there. You know, and the undertaking that was made, I mean, I remember on that the very first march that we had as civil society, I mean, the then premier, you know, I said, it's so easy to find the people that have done this to Babita. They're there. They work with him, with her. They're there. Those that were preferring those charges, those trumped up charges against her and making her life miserable, are working in there.
And what did he do? He promoted that person. They protected that person. That person left with a good, nice pension or handshake. Babita's no more.
Yeah. So I think it's up to us, Pumi, to say, you know, what is it that we want to see happening? I mean, I've been asked this question quite a number of times. Would you do it again? My fabric, you know, says, I don't think I would allow something wrong and just to happen and sweep it under the cup.
Because that's how you're wired.
This is how I'm wired. And call me Horkia Papa and stuff like that. Why does she get herself involved in these things? Why doesn't she keep quiet and stuff like that? Well, I'm not one to keep quiet, you see, because that's not who I am. And if something is wrong, unless we really do speak out, and one would encourage really people to really speak out, somewhere or another, it will be recognized to say, well, it's a game. This needs to stop, and stop it must, because this land is ours, and these criminals are not going to take it over. So the Babita, Bojimi, their deaths should just not be in vain. You understand? We really need to carry on. And that's why I admire the work that Jeff has done, Jeff Wicks has done in relation to Babita.
I think that is a wonderful place to end this conversation, because I agree. I think it's important to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to show the people that make the calls, that bear the witness, and make them the heroes too.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I thank you. I thank you for coming in. I thank you for the work that you do. And more importantly, the fact that you stand in between the people who would want to steal our country into the ground, the people who would want to steal the futures of our children, and stand in the gap to say this far and no further. Yeah. And I do. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the work that you do. And I hope that somebody watches this today and goes, I want to be like that. Yeah. I want to be like that too. Yeah. I want to be the hero for this country that I can be.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you for your words.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us for this discussion.
The light really turned on for me today in how it's the integrity of all of us as individuals in our individual roles at our places of work and in our homes that needs to shift to where we all no longer turn a blind eye to even the smallest act of wrongdoing. That can turn a tide where our country is not stolen by a connected few.